Anyway, here at lunch today with us are, let's establish the names and the voices just once along the way. Bob Lawson. Bob, how are you?
Oh, I'm very well, Ray, in a reminiscent mood.
Yeah. What were your years at HAS?
1948 to 1960.
Okay. Randy is here.
Hello, Ray.
Half of a team. Talk to the other half in a minute. Randy, you came about the time I did. Who wants
can
the
we get
bread
that
there?
Down
yeah.
Over there?
About 1949 or 50?
Well, 50, yes. I came over in 50 and was there with television until late 70.
Okay, Milton is here. Who does not know Milton Metz around the table? Nobody held up a hand. He's the only one still employed at HAS.
Thank you very much, Ray.
That was a very good...
My big voice.
Using
Nancy.
The announcer's voice. Let me see who else is having lunch with us today. Bob is here. Milton is here. Randy is here. And the other half of the team is, I want to hear a howdy here, Tom. Tom Brooks.
Howdy.
Thank you.
Was anyone else invited who didn't come?
No. This is it. Five of
you don't dare turn down an invitation.
No, not to this lunch.
What'd you say, Mel?
They don't dare turn down an invitation.
Tom, when did you
there was anyone else.
When did you start at HAS?
November 15th.
Boy, he's got that date down.
This year?
What'd you get?
50 years ago, I believe.
Oh, 45, wait, Tom. Mm-hmm. Then actually, you were there before anybody here around the table. When did you start 48, Bob?
Yes, August, the end of August of 1948.
Milton, when did you go to the big blowtorch?
46.
You know, driving out in the car, I think we've all got an audition first. Except for Bob Lawson. He'll have to come up with one. Tom, you were the only non-announcer they ever hired at HAS. Is that not true?
I believe that's so.
But you were working at Reynolds Metal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was the only one they ever hired without ever seeing first.
Right.
They never did that again.
but didn't you audition on the telephone or something?
No. I found my disc. A couple months ago,
yeah.
And I have it, believe it or not.
Oh, for goodness sake.
I'd love decades to have old, and I played it to production. Our production guy put it on a cassette for me. And I said, do you know who that is? And he got the funniest look on his face. Because
yeah.
He couldn't, it was like me, but you know, I was a young man when I did that.
So did that have to be the old tape? The old
big
disc?
Old record, yeah.
That's the only thing you could send. Okay, Tom then was hired and was not a professional because it was the war years. And they tried to hire some female announcers, and it didn't work out at Wave, I understand.
Really?
Yeah, that was my memory of it.
Uh-huh.
But you were hired from Reynolds Metals. What were you doing there?
Personnel manager.
Personnel manager and came to HAS as an announcer.
Yeah, at a really a loss in salary.
Really? That doesn't sound good. I'm talking up the biggest station in the state, and it was a loss from Reynolds Metals.
I did. I made $54.30 a week.
Was Foster there then? Was Foster at HAS when you came? Do you remember?
No, he was at WBE.
Okay. So you came over because you wanted to be in showbiz.
Yeah.
You wanted to be among the showbiz people. Right? All right. Now let's see, Randy, if I remember correctly for you.
Thank you.
We had a... You tell the story. Roy Starkey.
Yeah, you had a...
You laughed, Bob? Was he funny?
At WHAS then, Roy Starkey was the resident Western singer. I'd had a group there in 1948.
Yeah.
But... called the Swingin' Cowboys, and we had a year's contract with Vicks. So at the end of that contract, they asked us to choose whether we wanted to be on in the evening and noon or the morning.
Yeah.
Noon. We chose the evening and noon, and then they started news programs in the evening, and they eliminated that, and so that left us out at the end of our contract for a year. And I went to WGRC, which you mentioned earlier. Then WKLO, and I was there when they called me. Roy Starkey had they were going to do a program called T-Bar Ranch.
T television, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Roy started.
Did it have a name then?
Had you given it a name yet?
Yeah. Harold Fair had picked out a name for it.
I saw Starkey's audition.
He wanted Roy Starkey to play the Happy Birthday song in March time so the kids could march around the table,
this was
as I understood.
Fair's idea.
And Roy did it the only way he knew, and that wasn't what Harold Fair wanted. And as I understand it, Roy said that was the only way he knew how to do it. So I think Tom was the one that asked if he knew anybody else or something, and I was at WKLO. At the same time I was at WKLO, Foster Brooks was doing a disc jockey program of pop music, which followed 4 hours of country music, this disc jockey show I was doing.
At KLO?
At KLO.
I never knew that.
KLO. And so they called me to come over to WHS, and I went over and auditioned, and you know, it's a simple matter to change tempo so that somebody
marched. They liked you right away.
Yeah.
And did you what?
Did you practice on the street on the way over and how to play it?
No, I didn't even know what they wanted when I went over.
Ralph Fair told me. He says, you think you can get Randy Antrim, the guy that's over at whatever.
WKLO then. Yeah.
WKLO. And I said, well, I imagine I could. And he said, call him up. And I went down and called him, got him on the phone. And I said, what are you doing? He says, I'm rehearsing for whatever it was.
That circus program we did in the morning, on Saturday mornings over there. Mm-hmm. Big Top Circus.
I said, well, could you come over here pretty quick and quickly and get do the audition, I mean, for TBRV. Not TBRV, because it wasn't even named
Children's TV program.
Huh?
Circle Star Ranch, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That was a radio show.
Yeah.
Boy, that was pretty good.
So he was over there before I could hang up.
What a way to
not
start
quite
a career.
That fast, but anyway.
Did they hire you on the spot?
I did go over.
Oh, yeah.
Did that, and they did hire me on the spot. They offered me the job on the spot.
From that time.
And I went back to WKLO, and Joe Eaton, of whom we mentioned earlier, was the general manager of WKLO.
Had been at HAS.
Yes, and I told him that I had this offer.
He left when Jolas came, is that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Told him I had this offer, and that I was thinking, considering it seriously, and Joe said, that's, you know, not have anything to do with TV, it's just a passing fad like everything else. I told him if he would pay me the same he was paying Foster.
Yeah.
Which he wasn't doing because he was paying Foster a salary plus alimony.
And, what?
Alimony.
Plus his alimony payment.
Was he
made that for him every
year.
So
you never knew that,
son. And he said no, he couldn't do that. So I said, well, okay, I'm taking the other thing. And had it not been for that situation, I may not have ever been to WHS.
That's right. But
let's mark our time. We're talking about the week or 10 days before March 27th.
Right.
March 27th, 1950.
Right.
Because I went there a week ahead of time. All right. We were going around the table on firsts on auditions. Okay. Bob, you got anything? You've had 5 minutes.
Well,
now.
I was an announcer at WKYW. How's my sound here?
I think you're
an
enunciator.
You'll be better.
Sound like I usually do. All right. I was an announcer at WKYW, and a guy named Metz came to the house next door to me, which, by the way, was occupied by sports writer Larry Beck of the Courier Journal.
Yeah.
And we got talking a time or two, and Milt told me that a fellow named Jim Lounsbury and somebody else were getting ready to leave the announcing staff at HAS, and it would be a good time for me to go down and check out with the HAS people. So I went over to see Paul Clark, the chief announcer, and he gave me a routine audition, and there was a program director named Pete Disney. Now, Pete was a likable guy, but he was very slow on decisions, and it seemed like I was never going to get an answer to my audition and so forth. But after a due length of time, and the last week of August of 1948, Paul Clark let me know the job was available, come on over and we'll get you started. And that's the way I went. Incidentally, during the time when I was sweating out that job changeover, Nancy, my wife, had a baby, and we added to the family. It was a big week, anyhow.
I can see.
So I stayed there till 1960.
Well, to round out the group, I hope I'm the only guy here who had to audition three times to get the job. Same day. They took me into the studio, probably C, not the big studio A, and said, we're glad you came over. We've auditioned somebody else, Cliff Mercer by name, from LOU. And if you will, we don't have the equipment here yet, but if you would, see that music stand over there? And I said, yes, sir. I was scared, of course, to the nth degree.
Who are you talking to?
I was talking to Paul Clark.
Oh.
He was setting me up, and I was in the big old cold studio, you know, concave or convex. Remember the acoustics and else? And he said, would you just make believe that's the camera and read to the music stand? And I said, yes, I'll do that. That's fine. He nodded. He liked the voice. And then he calls Ralph Hansen, who's up on 7, to come down. And I do
Ralph
the same. Ralph Hansen.
Doing what?
Ralph had come over from Wave at the time, Ralph Hansen, to be our program director.
Oh.
Remember him?
Yeah.
And I do the same thing, getting a little more nervous all the time. And he says, that's great. We like you. Now there's one more person, Harold Fair. I wait about 10 minutes for Fair to show. Do it the third time. Fair says, you know, we like you and we need to start right away. But my wife is sitting downstairs on a parking meter, so I can't tell you till next Monday whether or not you won the audition. It was awful.
I remember that.
I got the job.
Yes, they liked you. I remember when you came over. Mine was peculiar because I answered a blind box ad in Broadcasting Magazine.
Is that right?
So I didn't know what the station was.
Yeah.
The box number. And even when they told me where it was, I didn't know where Louisville was. I lived in Cleveland.
Had you worked for a couple of smaller stations in Cleveland?
I'd come out of the Army, and I'd work my way. In college, I'd work.
Yeah.
Well, I've been trying to remember the name of the newscaster.
What?
Who was talking about how well he knew some public official.
Oh, that was Dick Oberlin.
Dick Oberlin, yeah.
He called the governor of Indiana.
I can't remember who it was, and he said he knew him so well, and then when the guy answered the phone, he had
such a really
and he had to do his phone twice.
Yeah, the governor says, who? And he says, Dick Oberlin. And he said, O-B-E-R.
At the time, I think the whole newsroom staff was in there at that particular point, and there was Dick.
Oh, boy. 20 names of former employees. What are you all talking about?
Could he name 20 announcers?
That would be interesting.
How about the guy you used to make fun of in the morning? Billy something or other, and he did this waffle deal. He always said waffle instead of waffle, because he sold waffle. Well, I've got myself doing it. Anyhow, he sold a waffle syrup from some place or another, and he came from Columbus, Ohio, but he was only here about 6 months, and you always made fun of this guy because he always said waffle. Now, friends, get out there and buy waffle syrup. And it was a country show, and he was on for probably an hour or two before we came in the morning. I don't think it was an all-night show. I think he came in like when the hens woke up and so forth, you know.
This was in the morning.
Billy something, and his wife was around. I mean, I think she came in every once in a while, and I believe he even sang a little bit, but he played records mostly. He did that old early morning frolic thing for a while.
Are you talking about Buddy Brock?
No. Buddy Brock is somebody totally different.
I remember Buddy Brock.
I can remember.
Dale Evans was Honey Evans, and Buddy Brock played trumpet. And Dale Evans, she was called Honey Evans, then was the girl singer on the program.
That was Roy Rogers' wife?
Yes.
Yeah.
Did she sing pop or country?
Pop. They did all pop.
It was just a little combo.
Did Roy work here for us?
No.
Evans worked down there, you know.
Autry was here for 3 months, but not Rogers.
Oh, you worked 3 months?
You guys are getting into my memorabilia. Let's stay with it. We had... I know you know the names. We had also a famous newsman who was dismissed because of his heavy beard who went on to NBC.
Pete Katz. Who?
Pete somebody else.
Pete
Hackus.
Pete
Hackus,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Peter Hackus, yeah.
Of course.
He died about a year ago.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Read news at HAS. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Oberlin told him he had no future in the business. Right. He wanted a $5 raise.
And Oberlin said,
and Oberlin said, you'll never make it. And Oberlin had his own station 6 months later.
Service station, yeah, Shell Oil.
All right. Backus went to CBS. Backus was a good guy. Remember him?
What's
the
CBS?
Movie Network. He was very good.
That's right. I saw him in that part. Okay, so we've got... We had another one, and this is trivia, but it predated my time. We had a fellow that they used to bring up at union negotiations. Phil Sullivan?
Phil Sutterfields.
Yep. No, that was sports.
Paul Sullivan. Making $1,000 a week.
He read the news for the B&W Network, Brown and Williams, or somebody, and Mr., I liked the guy, but he always cited him as being worth far less than they're having
Mr.
to pay.
Baker.
Yes,
did he go
right.
to Cincinnati, Sullivan?
I don't know where he was. Yeah, maybe he did.
He said he came in with his dog on a leash, sat down and read 15 minutes of news for the network, was gone, and we paid him, you wouldn't believe how much money. I can still remember that story. Right.
But that was the newspaper mentality.
I know.
They never understood us.
Right.
They didn't keep Don McNeil either.
Was Don McNeil at HAS?
McNeil had a chance to audition for a job somewhere. He wouldn't give him time off.
Yeah.
And he took it anyway, and they fired him, and he became a big star in Chicago.
Okay. Stay with Chicago and the Breakfast Club. What was the singer's name?
Marianne Luckett.
That's right.
Marianne Luckett.
Kenny Reel.
Kenny Reel.
Yeah,
right.
Kenny was here just about 3 weeks ago. We played the Musician Junior Golf Tournament.
Did you all know Bud Abbott died?
Yes. Unfortunately.
Now, I've always thought Bud would have been able to handle today's pressures as a disc jockey and so forth,
probably.
Because Bud had an attitude and an approach which I thought was really superb. I really thought he was an outstanding.
Yeah, he had that irreverence that they use today so much.
Had what?
Irreverence. You know, he would kid the management and so.
Didn't we have a staff of maybe 7 or 8 with our chief, Paul Clark, at one time?
Yeah, it's a chief announcer is an anachronism today. You know, it's
gone.
What is a chief announcer?
All right.
There is none.
Right.
Who?
Not anymore.
A chief announcer.
There is no such thing.
Not even Paul Clark?
Yeah, Paul was the chief, but I'm trying to think who our people were. Were you early morning, Keck, before you went to TV? You were early morning on radio?
Yeah. I was early.
Were you? All right, you were early. Let's come down the list. Bud Abbott would have been on, and then I wasn't doing any radio, but come on down the list. Who would have been some of the others? Say in the 60s, when we had a full staff of 8 people on staff.
Who was the fellow who was in the
midday
service?
Bob, of course, had been in there somewhere early morning, right, Bob?
I left in 60, but I was trying to think of Joe Hamilton, who was a part of the announcing staff at the time I left. I think Joe died a little later on. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Bill... he also died.
Bill Britton.
Mostly TV, Bill Britton.
Sam Allgood was there.
Sam Allgood, but Sam left, I believe. He went into...
Sam's still living in.
Sam's gone.
Isn't he?
Died about a year ago.
Big voice, Bob Flournoy.
Yeah.
Strange, big voice. Yeah, Flournoy was there.
Went back to Oklahoma.
When did he leave?
Oh, he left early. He left just about 6 months or...
Who?
No, about a year after I came to work.
Bob Flournoy. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Remember that name?
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that Scholes commented about doing a TV commercial for, I don't know what bank, Liberty National, whatever it was. And Scholes said he looked like he just robbed a bank.
That got for the
he was scared to death, I'm sure. He didn't like to do TV.
Yeah.
He did the weather.
When did Lounsbury, what were his years?
Jim Lounsbury.
Lounsbury left in the late 40s. 48 or 9.
You don't see the waitress back here.
48, sorry. August 48.
She said she was going to sort of let us go after we got started in this, so
we'll look for it in a second. Hang on. You want
the chili.
Cup of chili.
Let me interrupt with my little own personal comment here, Ray.
I'm not the moderator. This is Steven. Anybody
you look like the moderator.
Thank you.
You know, as a kid growing up in Pennsylvania, southwestern Pennsylvania, near Pittsburgh, in the 30s, I used to dial for faraway stations, DXing we used to call it, and one of the stations that came in very well was HAS in Louisville. In fact, it came in so well that at times my mother used to enjoy listening to a guy named Jack Turner, who had a little piano and song program, the announcer being Joe Eaton, who's already, I think, been mentioned here once today. And later, we found this 37 flood problem coming along in Louisville, and we listened to all the details we could find on HAS back in Pennsylvania, and we felt like we were becoming acquainted with Louisville. WHAS had really, out of the blue, become part of our lives, and it was most interesting arrangement, most interesting development.
Pete French was the fellow that did the flood, you know. And Foster.
Huh?
Pete French and Foster were both here during the flood.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Pete stayed at the station. And
is Pete there in 37?
Oh, yeah. He's the one who was there.
I didn't know that.
Lived Foster there, went, practically.
Oh, wait, I mean, they went out.
No, that's Pete,
what about Pete Monroe.
Pete Monroe. Yeah, that's, I'm sorry. That's, I said Pete French. Pete Monroe. Pete, well, French was
Pete
the
French
newscaster.
Was there,
yeah.
I don't think so.
Okay.
It's Pete Farmer.
One of the interesting things that Ray mentioned a little earlier today, when I came to Fort Knox, which was my first trip to Louisville in the pre-war days, the people in the barracks used to have a radio or two, and inevitably every morning at about, I don't know, 6 o'clock, 6:30, whatever time it was we were getting out of our bunks, there'd be Gus Flexner doing commercials for Greater Louisville, which at that time had some fabulous figure of investments and so forth, around maybe $5 million.
Fully insured organization.
Yeah, fully insured. And there was another line I wish I could remember, Ray. Maybe you remember something about something will allow as the... But anyhow,
I know all of that, but we won't go into that.
I'll tell you, I remember a program that Tom had a part in. It was called Matinee with Mets. It was in the late 40s. And believe it or not, we had a 14-piece orchestra, live, Randy.
Mm-hmm.
Two vocalists, a man and a woman. It didn't last but a couple of months because it was expensive and it wasn't that great.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom was the second banana.
I'll tell you some stories on Brooks.
Yeah, let's hear them.
That's all, fellas.
Before the tape runs out.
Here, go ahead.
Late at night, we would put on the movie. And there would be long periods of time because it was a reel with tape. 30, 40 minutes. And Tom, and we would get hungry. And Tom, he couldn't decide whether he wanted to be a public benefactor or he wanted to make some money. But he had found this device. It was a machine that boiled water, and with it came cups of powder. One was chocolate, one was coffee, one was decaf, one was soup. And you would pour the cup of powder into the cup of boiling water and put it in his magic machine, and he would charge you 25 cents, or if he felt good, he wouldn't charge you anything. Remember that machine you had up there in the announce booth?
I remember something about it, but
yeah.
Faintly.
Oh, yeah.
I think your price was too low,
it
Tom.
It wasn't bad.
Milt, you told some stories once, and it goes back beyond me. I don't mean that facetiously, but didn't we have a general manager or part owner who had certain prohibited words that could not be said in the early days on HAS? What was his name?
His name was Credo Harris, and it preceded any of us here at this table.
I knew Credo.
Did you know Credo?
Yeah.
He was a sales executive from the newspaper that the Binghams had installed as the manager, and he was kind of a puritanical kind of fellow, and had a little English affectation, I think. He wanted you to say Kentucky Derby instead of Derby, and had certain prohibitions you couldn't use. Supposedly, I don't know, you couldn't use the word feet. It was supposed to be a vulgar expression or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But, well, you couldn't say a lot of words.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Today there's more freedom. With freedom, there's more license, but not as much responsibility.
Yeah. So who were some of the very earliest announcers?
Well, how about Bill Bond? I don't know how early he was.
Right.
He was his brother was a famous Ward Bond on
right.
the network.
Of course, Joe Eaton was one of the very early announcers.
He was an announcer before he became
Yes.
Who?
Joe Eaton was one of the early announcers at WHAS. Yes. Used to introduce our programs. When I was there, we were talking earlier about...
Didn't he die?
Yeah. About Dale Evans being at WHAS in the 30s. With Buddy Brock, they had a kind of a breakfast program, and She was called Honey Evans then, and she was the girl singer, and they did a pop music program.
Married Roy, and they're still, fortunately, around.
Yeah.
We had some other great alumni, and I'm trying to go way back now, but I can't remember some of the earliest ones.
Of course, my brother Bob was on WHAS before I was, and this is back in 1932.
He wasn't an announcer, though.
No, he wasn't an announcer.
And he went directly to WLS Chicago, or were there stops in between?
No, he was at WHAS. Well, he started out at UK. They had a studio at UK, and he did programs from the UK studio for WHAS. Then came back to Louisville, and we went on WLAP for a few months, and then went to WHAS. And he left WHAS in 1936, before the flood, just before the flood, and went to Chicago, and went to WBBM and WJJD, which were owned by the Atlas brothers up there. And I stayed, and I went to Western, and the flood washed the house down the river. I came back and went back into radio at WHAS then in 1937 with a group called Uncle Henry's Kentucky Mountaineers and Sunshine Sioux and the Rock Creek Rangers, and we had the Early Risers Roundup with Happy Morris and did those programs. And then we left Sunshine Sioux. I was with her group. We went to KMOX, and Bob called me from, and I went to Chicago. And he was at WBBM until the war, and we were with the Ben Burney Orchestra when the war came along on the Wrigley Spearmint Gum Program.
You mean until the Second War?
Second World War, yes.
Thanks, Tom.
I don't remember.
He's very old, you know.
And then when he came back, and he went into service too, as I did, and when he came back, that he was at WBBM for just a short time, and then he went to WLS.
You were with Ben Burney?
Yeah.
That's an old name.
My brother Bob and his wife, and we were on doing the Wrigley Spearmint Gum program from WBM. Les Paul played guitar in the orchestra. And we went on a tour of Cincinnati, Pittsburgh, Youngstown, Akron, Dayton, Toledo. We were in Akron at a theater there. We were doing six shows a day in those theaters. And it was Sunday morning, and my birthday's December 7th, you know, and I came down, somebody said the Japs had attacked Pearl Harbor. So I left the troop and came home and enlisted in the Air Force. I was in the Air Force for almost 5 years.
Somebody told me Gene Autry was at HAS for a short time.
In 1934, see, Pee Wee King came to town with Gene Autry.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
They came about the same time. Joe Frank was a booking agent and manager for Gene Autry at that time.
And he was somebody's father-in-law, wasn't he?
He's Pee-wee's father-in-law. And Joe Frank's two daughters sang. And Autry came in and was only here about 3 months. He did personal appearances just like all of us did throughout the state. And he left WHAS to go to Hollywood to start his movie career.
Yeah.
And Pee-wee stayed in Louisville. Joe Frank stayed in Louisville. And Pee-wee married one of the daughters, singers. So, and of course, Pee Wee never did work at WHAS except at that time. He joined. We went with a group called the Log Cabin Boys, and
Frankie Moore
and the Log Cabin Boys, and was with them for a short while, and then he left and he went to Nashville when he formed the Golden West Cowboys before he came to. Back to Wade.
I'm glad I'm the youngster here. I don't remember any of that.
I remember when Ray Shelton used to do live commercials.
Yes.
Was what?
Live commercials during the Late Show. It was very hard to do because there was no prompter and very little rehearsal.
And by the prompter.
And one night, he had a room full of furniture. Difficult. And there was all kinds of pieces of furniture, and he had to remember it all. And I'm the only, to this day, I think I'm the only one who caught it. He says, folks, for $694, he says, you can get this couch, this sofa, this lamp, this cop table, this chair over here and so forth. Kept on going, didn't know what he had said.
It's the absolute truth, too.
And I believe they sold out.
How about Hoedown? Let's do a couple of minutes on that. Well, that was a long-running, fantastically successful show.
Of course, it started out first over the program on WHAS called Square Dance.
You remember Hoedown, Tom?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember it, but that's all.
There was a program on early. They just called Square Dance, and they had square dancers come in, and it was me and Tiny Thomale. Janie Workman was the girl singer, and there was just the three of us, and then they had square dancers, so they called it Square Dance. That was on for about 6 or 8 months, and then they decided that it needed to be more, and that's when they started the Hayloft Hoedown. We were doing a program on radio called the Old Kentucky Barn Dance, so we just took the talent from the Old Kentucky Barn Dance and placed it in the TV setting, mm-hmm. and that went on in 1951 and went off in December 1969.
69.
So,
69,
yeah.
18 years.
Almost 19.
Probably underpaid for that, weren't you, Tom?
Yeah.
Most of us were, we thought at the time.
I never got a penny.
But yeah, the Hoedown was one of the longest-running country or even music shows of any kind with the same talent it started with, you know, for a long time.
Since we got the team together here, let's talk a little bit about T-Bar B. Ran from 1950 after we got rid of Roy Starkey.
First day, March 27th.
All right, on the air, the very first day. And it was, well, the first day was better than Black Tuesday, which was the second day. Do you remember that?
What year was that?
That was 1950. The one on the air. You were on T-Bar V. Now you got to get ready for this milk because you were the actor. Remember?
Yeah.
Okay.
Squire came a little later.
All right. Did Squire come later?
Just a little later.
So it ran from 50 to 71, right?
Yeah,
but how did they put the two of you together? I'd like to hear the story, because I was trying to be boy announcer up in the booth, you know.
Well, of course, Cack was doing his character of Cactus on a radio program called Circle Star Ranch.
Right, okay.
And would do, was called Cactus on that, weren't
you? Yeah,
and
we traveled with that, too. Yeah. Remember, we went to different schools in other cities.
Yeah. Uh-huh, and so he was already that character, and then when they added me as just the singing cowboy part of it, you know. It was just one of those natural fits, and it's been natural for a hell of a long time.
Sure has. How did the name come about?
I really can't say for sure. They searched around for a name.
You mean Randy or Khaki?
No,
Khaki, I've lost the thing.
T-Bar V Ranch. They're trying to figure out where that came from.
Birthday,
of course, you know what
you're
it
85
is.
It's in October, right?
No.
85 in October?
No, March.
March?
March.
All right, I hope I'm that sharp. Go ahead, Randy.
You know, of course, the name came from TV, usually with a dash between it, and the old Western brands, T-Bar-V. That's what the name came from. But I think Harold Fair was the one who kind of came up with the idea, don't you, Cack, as far as you remember?
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah.
It was a real Hallmark program. It came at the right time for the right audience.
Yeah.
And it had the certain freshness and innocence of those years for young people.
Didn't you all count one time how many kiddos had been up there?
Jim Sheehy kept a count of it, but unfortunately I think the station has lost the count. I remembered it as approximately 153,000 children, but Tom, I think, remembered it as a little fewer than that.
Yeah.
But something in that neighborhood of people, of children we talked to, because it was on 5 days a week. And see, when we first went on the air, we were on from 5 to 6:15 in the evening.
I didn't remember that.
And we did nothing but talk to children. No entertainment at all. It was just, because the television was so new, it was just being on. And some days we would talk to as many as 75 or 80 children in that hour and 15 minutes.
But they did the hi to Mommy and Daddy and drew their gun and did that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. I got to be Randy.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, there's one thing that comes to my mind with our getting together for lunches at various times. Almost inevitably, when Randy and Cactus walk into a place where they have table service and the public is around, they immediately draw people who say, I remember being on TRV, and this always strikes me as being something really wonderful.
It was a very long run, right. 21 years.
When did you come on as the squire to the acting Bitmelt?
I think a few years after.
It was 3 years after you started.
Like 1952, around that, or 53. And, of course, you know, Vic Scholes, who was the general manager of the station, had young children who were the TRV age, you know. And he used to gauge our program quite a bit by the reactions of his own kids.
Really?
You know.
Yeah, it was a real scientific way.
Yeah. And we used to have, we had those serials on. You remember, you know, the Buck Rogers serials and Flash Gordon. And
things you used to see in the shows 20 years earlier.
You know, and they'd have a chapter one day. Anyway, they brought in one called The Clutching Hand. And it opened with the black-gloved hand coming up through a window, you know. And well, it was on for one chapter. And the next day, Vic Scholes came in and said, take that thing off. Scared his kids to death. So we never did get to finish that one.
Tom, who came up with the idea of you falling into the cake every day? Was that you?
No, I saw it on a movie somewhere.
And decided you'd do it for the kids.
Better. Yeah, just see if they'd like it, you know.
Yeah.
Well, they liked it.
Did you develop the little dance that you did for that, or had
Oh, yeah.
You'd done that on some radio shows, too, I guess. So he just transferred it.
Mm-hmm. When I was the villain, Snoopy McSneer, with the handlebar mustache, and I had a black cape, my wife knew a tall woman. Girl, and she gave me her graduation velvet cape. You know, I've seen.
Remember it well.
I wonder where that came from.
Remember it well.
I gathered. I still have it. It's bespattered with the pies that we used to throw at each other, and I had a top hat which I still have, all beat up. And I too, my career on that program ended again due to the manager Vic Scholes, because I was always doing something.
Diabolical.
I remember I tried to hold him up once, and I drew, it was just a cap pistol, I drew it out of my waistband, and I drew it out with such vigor that it flew out of my hand and over the set. Now, what do you do in live television? Yeah. And what I did, I said, I'll shoot you with my finger. I mean, it was a poor ad lib.
Well, those were the good old days. Give us 40 years of Juniper 52385 Mets here. Who were the top three or four people that you interviewed, Milton, in all those years, do you think?
Who, what?
I'm talking about his talk show, Mets Here.
Oh.
And I ask you who the top three or four were. Can you come up with
them? Oh, I don't know.
Importance? Distinguished people?
Yeah, Minnie Pearl.
Good
Walter
guests,
Cronkite,
whatever.
Something like a Minnie Pearl or Walter Cronkite or somebody in government, a senator or something, but that's not what stuck with me, because everything that happened to me good at that radio station came as a result of that talk show that started in 1959.
Who was your first guest?
There was no guest. The topic was, should Khrushchev be invited to the United States? It wasn't so much the guest. It was not a guest-driven program. It was a topic-driven, and I had things working for me. One was, I had no competition at night.
Right.
Two, nobody had any experience about it here, so they weren't able to be overly critical of me. They let me alone, and by the time they paid attention to what the station had, the program had grown and got its own followers, and it was a great training ground, because it was 2 or 3 hours of ad-lib, and when you ad-lib, you have every opportunity to make a jackass out of yourself.
Or simply run out of material.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
what I did on stormy nights. It was bad because people would not call on the telephone.
Do you ever have that trouble, Milt, a night when practically nobody calls?
Occasionally, especially in the beginning, and it's a fearful experience, of course. After it got some backing, we did all right. Well, you learn to take, you bring some material with you. The worst nights are happened when the equipment failed, and I didn't get any sympathy from the management.
Well, our engineers who didn't work very hard.
Or the program director said, I'll take care of it tomorrow, but tomorrow's not when you needed help. You needed help now. And how can you do a phone-in program when the phones don't work? And you couldn't play music. It was just fearful.
You did it on a 5-second tape delay, but did you have to cut many people
very
off because of profanity?
Yeah.
How many states did you reach at all?
I've got a map down at the station down there. There's a pin from at least every one. I remember once that Randy saved my life one time. nowadays, you because there are no announcers hanging around. There's one guy comes, another guy goes. I thought it was off. It was a basketball game, and I take my little boy and my wife to a movie, Showcase Cinema. And as we leave in the parking lot, I idly turned on WHAS. Went to my horror, I heard Randy Atcher conducting my program.
Oh, yes. Talk about a frightening experience.
I was really, you know, I almost drove into a lamppost.
I did not remember that one. What, you had, the time had slipped or what?
I had made a mistake that there was no preemption, and I thought it was off. Now, what was really the bad part was, he was very good at it.
I was scared to death that night.
I'll never forget that. You were the only one to be pressed into service.
Nobody, and to the station's duty, credit, they all called me to see. They thought something was wrong with me. They were sick. Nobody ever bawled me out, I would say, to their credit. But I was just terribly upset by it.
An analogy to that, of course, was the night when you called me and said, I've been playing tennis with Joe Creason.
Oh, yeah.
And he's had, I think, a heart attack. Can you go in? It was like 20 minutes after 8 to go on at 8:30.
That's right.
Great guy.
He died right on the court.
Yeah, you went to the hospital with him or whatever.
Sure.
He was from Benton, Kentucky, if I remember.
Yeah. He used to write that in his column time and again.
Benton?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's funny. At the fair this year, I ran into a fellow from Benton, Kentucky. He was a county commissioner in Marshall County.
Got to go. Well, it's been fun.
It has been.
It's been great. We went from sign on July something of 22.
Yes. Right, let's just go around and see whose names we can remember.
Okay, before we close.
All right, Jack Wilson.
Yeah.
Jerry Bodorf. Yeah. Ken Meeker.
Yeah.
Bud Abbott. Jim Lounsbury. Morris Bob Flournoy. Steve Fisher.
Sam Allgood. He's been seen.
Sam Allgood.
How many you got there? 10? We got 10 to go if we make 20
Joe
per time.
Hamilton.
Joe Hamilton.
Bud Abbott.
Lee Jordan.
Lee Jordan. New York.
Jim Lounsbury.
Sam Allgood. Now, you said it, Lounsbury. Yeah. Sam Allgood. We got 13 now. Paul Clark, of course, our chief.
Uh-huh.
Around the table, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That makes 18.
Ed Mills
is 19.
Yeah.
We need one more time to make 20.
Surely
we got 19.
We got 19.
Phyllis Knight.
Well, maybe. She was an announcer as such.
You mentioned Ken Meeker.
Did we say Ken?
Yeah.
We say Ken.
Did you say somebody?
I said Phyllis.
Phyllis Knight. She was an announcer.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Sam Gifford was an announcer. He started as an announcer just after I did.
So we did come up with 20.
Yeah.
But there must have been three times that many.
Yeah, it gets confusing with the newscasters and announcers.
Yeah.
Some of which did both. You know, everybody did a five-minute newscaster.
But it's surprising that with the longevity of the staff, right? Remarkable.
Let's do a recap with saying here on the 31st of August, 1994. Signed on radio in 22, TV in 50. Bob, you're retired in reasonably good health and happy, right?
Reasonably.
Randy?
I have an observation. Let's get together and make a contribution to the news department to buy a dictionary.
I want to add that was much more common in the old days for guys to look up dictionaries. I never see anyone looking at a dictionary today.
And you can tell by some of the things they say that they don't have one.
Well, half the people don't know how to pronounce the letter W.
Yes, that's absolutely, right. Yes.
How do you pronounce a letter W?
W.
You were with Reynolds Metals. You didn't have to do it. It's all right. Right.
Half of them say W.
One of your pet peeves was nuclear turned around and.
Oh, nuclear.
I know. Nuclear. People who said nuclear and say similar. Yeah.
So how do you pronounce nuclear?
Nuclear.
Yeah.
Nuclear.
Let me ask you a question.
Anyway, Ray, I'm not the retiring type, so I'm the
You're not retired.
Narrator at the Printing House for the Blind. Yeah. Still playing music quite a lot, and still have an active real estate license.
That's great.
And play golf every day if I can get out on the course.
Right. Milt, you have a relaxed schedule, but look forward to being active for another 15 or 20. How long do you want?
As long as I feel good, Ray.
Yeah.
I I like what I'm doing. I'm doing the commentary that runs three right. days a week, and some commercials, and I'm going to stick with it because I like it, and it's not too demanding for me. It's challenging.
You're not
I like
keeping
it.
This a secret, are you?
No.
Because we can't hear you.
I think you're on the bad side of Tom, is what he's saying. Maybe.
What I'm it's saying, Tom, I'm all right, Tom. I'm glad to be with you.
Good, thank you.
You don't have any regrets of 25 years at HAS, do you? 30,
no,
35?
No, not any.
That's what I thought. Let's do the sign-off song. I just came up with that little
which
thing.
One are we talking about?
Well, we got to do the TBRV.
Okay,
sure.
That's the...
You got to
brush your teeth each morning. Get lots of sleep at night. Mind your mom and daddy. Because they know what is right. Lots of exercise each day. And eat up all of your food. And always wear a great big smile. It makes you look so good. Be sure to look both left and right before you cross the street. And be with us tomorrow at 9 when it's TBRV Ranch time. Bye, boys and girls.
Isn't that what you did? Huh?